Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe.
Sponsored by Wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.
Hi, everybody. I'm Larry Port. Welcome back to another episode of the Dream Job Cafe. I'm very excited to have with me today Mike Giordano. He is a financial advisor, and I think this is just a great job. He is with Williams Wealth Management, and we're very excited to have him. So welcome, Mike.
Thank you so much for having me. I mean, it is a cafe, but I'm just drinking water, so I hope you're not going to throw me out.
Yeah, sometimes there's water in this thing, too. So, Mike, you've done a bunch of very different, interesting careers, which we can get into, but tell us a little bit about your current role. What is a financial advisor and what is it that they do?
You know what, Larry, it's fascinating because it seems like it's very straightforward. There's a lot of people out there that hold themselves out as financial advisors, thousands and thousands, but everybody does it a little bit differently. So there's not like one type of financial advisor that you can say, all right, this is the exact mold that everybody's following. For us at our firm at Williams Wealth Management, up here in Greenville, South Carolina, what we like to do is we think of ourselves as somebody that's trying to help navigate somebody throughout their life. So investments is obviously a big portion of it, but it's not the only thing. You've got to help somebody think about how they're going to navigate their retirement or how they're going to navigate their children's education, how they're going to navigate their business, if they want to buy or sell a business, how they're navigating their careers. So you're just helping people navigate things, both in joyous times and in those times where they're stuck and they're like, I need to make a transition. And so you're just trying to help them do that in the smoothest way possible. So it's a little bit like therapy, only because we can see the numbers, the financials, we can actually give them guidance based on what their actual situation is.
Gotcha. So they can come to you for anything. And just so people know, there's kind of different aspects of it, right? There's the aspect of here is money and it needs to be invested properly. But then here is money and it needs to be invested properly. And here are tax things you need to think about. And then it's also like, here is money and how are you spending and how are you going to make it last? Like, you know, you guys come at it from these different angles. Can you talk a little bit about, like, I don't know, let's start with the investment stuff. Are you paying attention to Bloomberg all day long, or how does that aspect of it work?
Yeah, so we're not traders in the sense of like buying and selling all the time, but you're paying attention all the time. So you're always looking at what we are trying to always do is try to give people as much value as we can get. So we want to buy a company or a bond at a price at which we're going to get a lot of value for that. And so the chances of us losing money on it are reduced. So that's the essence of risk management. Understand what your risks are, and then you can, you know, manage the returns. And so we're trying to figure that stuff out from an investment standpoint so that we're not buying, even if it's a company's great. I mean, I'm a big fan of Costco. I got four kids. So warehouse buying is great. But, you know, Costco is a business that will trade something like here. And right now it might be up here. And so you can like the company, not necessarily like the stock, and sometimes vice versa. And so I think that's what we're trying to do for our clients is make sure that we're putting them in a position where they can have the best long-term success, that their money can grow in a responsible fashion over the long term, not necessarily trying to catch the most return over any 1 month, 2 month, 3 month period.
Right. Okay. So I've seen some of these kind of financial advising things at play. And what I find really interesting is that they're able to calculate out based on history, like how somebody might be performing when they're 90 years old. Like, can you talk a little bit about like some of the like tools you use to kind of like, if you're allowed to, because, you know, banks, I know they're always like tricky about these kind of things that you use on an everyday basis to generate the kind of like insights and reports that you guys do?
Yeah, I mean, financial advising is first and foremost a human endeavor. People want to talk to another human being to figure out what they should be doing. And so having another human being telling them, yes, you're on the path, or no, you're not on the path, is so important to them. But human beings need technology to harness a ton of data in a very fast and concise manner. And so we use financial planning software. We use risk management software on the investment side, all kinds of different pieces of software. But ultimately, you're making educated guesses when you're thinking about how someone's assets are going to perform 30 years in the future. We're not trying to pretend ourselves to think, oh, it's exactly going to play out this way. And that's why having a plan is important. But the most important thing is financial planning, because today's plan could die in 3 months when the person says, I want to live a different way. I want to change careers. I want to have a different kind of retirement. So the point is that you create a plan and then you're consistently planning with somebody as they're making changes in their life. And when you do that, then all of a sudden over time, those tweaks aren't necessarily going to be as wild as they would be if you said, I'm going to put a plan together and I'm going to try to tell you how your investments are going to be 30 years from now.
Gotcha. So like when you're thinking about like what your day-to-day work is like for people that might like not know about this career, like how would you describe it? You come into the office, what do you do on a typical day, typical week?
Yeah, I just sit here and I just crunch numbers. I just keep pounding numbers into my head, and crunching them. Now, that's what most financial professionals do. But financial advising, like I was saying, is such a human endeavor that you're constantly talking to people. You're talking to lots of different people about their situations and how they're feeling about their finances and what kind of problems they're facing, whether it's a tax issue or they don't understand how much income their portfolio can generate or they don't know how to fund their child's college education. So you're doing a lot of talking human to human, and then you're doing some behind the scenes work after you have these conversations to say, okay, what you just told me, I'm going to start inputting that information into the computer and I'm going to start analyzing your finances based on what you told me and then trying to figure out, okay, what's the right path forward? So it's a lot like, you know, there's probably an overused analogy, but someone getting their GPS unit out and they say, here's my starting point, here's where I want to go. And you're trying to help them get there in the time manner that they're looking to get there.
What I find is like amazing, because I've dealt with financial planners before, and I mean, I don't like the word financial planner so much as I like, and I think that's what your accreditation is, right? A certified financial planner.
That's correct.
I like financial advisor because, or financial therapist. Like to me, like the value is in the peace of mind. Like yes, you're selling me financial management, but it's like those cheesy commercials. What you really are selling me is the ability for me to be able to sleep well at night and knowing this is like, we got you, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, you know, people are afraid that their investments are going to go to zero and they're going to run out of money. And that's one fear. But the real fear is all the amount of time that is wasted by thinking you're going to be potentially running out of money and not being able to enjoy your life. And so that's really what people are looking for is, hey, I want to know, do I have a sound plan? Have you thought about all the risks that could derail my plan? If the world goes to hell in a handbasket, am I still going to be okay? And you're having that's a conversation that you have to have on a consistent basis, because, you know, I can make you feel great today, Larry. And then 2 months from now, something happens within your sphere. And all of a sudden, you're like, I'm freaking out. I don't know what if everything's okay. And so it's a constant thing that you kind of constantly have to keep reminding people of what their plan looks like and that they're going to be okay.
So consequently, I mean, the people that kind of go into this, and you included, I mean, be kind of a you kind of got to like people. You got to be a real people person. I mean, I would think like it's to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it seems like it's more of like, obviously you need to have some analytics and we want you to have some analytics, but it's also that ability to be good with people. So you're not like super crazy financial quants so much as you are like, yes, you have financial knowledge, but you're more of a people kind of person. Is that fair?
Totally fair. I would even expand it though. You not only have to like people, you got to care about people, because everybody's situation is unique and specific. And you can't take two people who might be in the same exact profession, same age, same everything, and say they're exactly the same person. Their minds work differently. And you've got to be able to say, how do I marry the financials of this person with the mindset of this person so that I can give them the best advice? And that means I've got to take the extra layer of saying, okay, I care enough about you to want to understand your story, to want to understand how you think, to want to understand what your motivations are so that I can give you the best advice for you, not necessarily the best advice for a 55-year-old doctor or a 62-year-old business owner.
Right. And then what I've seen also is like this can extend into like you'll be places and like financial advisors will be at like weddings, or they'll be at like major life events. Like the relationships that you get with your client is not like kind of a typical transactional relationship. It seems to go like a lot deeper than that. Is that, have I seen like edge conditions here, or is that like kind of how it is?
No, that is how it is. And that's how it's kind of even, it's even morphed into that more so versus like the old 1980s style brokers and, you know, all the smoke filled rooms and all that kind of stuff that you see in those movies back then. No, today it's not a transactional business for most people, certainly not for us. It's a relationship business. And the relationship continues to add value the longer it goes because you know more about this person, this family. You know more about how they think. You know more about, you know, how they've interacted or how they felt in previous crises, previous situations of turbulence, either in the markets or in their own lives. And so you're able to harness all that to give them the best advice. And that's why, to your point, oftentimes a financial advisor is a really integral part in somebody's life and almost like it almost becomes somewhat of a friendship. And a lot of these relationships are friendships. But yeah, you do go to weddings, you go to funerals, you go to, you know, sometimes children's birthday parties. So there's a lot of that stuff. And it's, I would say, the most fulfilling and rewarding aspect of the work.
All right. Well, it sounds like Cake may be involved in some of these. That sounds good. Yeah. So, and you were like a finance major with a math minor in college, right?
I was actually, so I did a little bit of both. I was actually a journalism major, broadcast journalism major up in Syracuse University. We call it Cyberacuse because of all the snow. Yeah. I don't necessarily miss that here down in sunny South Carolina. Right. But yeah, so I mean, I did broadcast journalism with a finance minor, and that's only because I didn't understand this career even existed. So this is why this is a wonderful podcast that you're doing, because a lot of people may not know that. I mean, I got into the finance because my dad, who is not in the financial industry, he's a meteorologist for the federal government. He was just like, hey, I'm not going to let you, you know, use the money you're making doing the newspaper route and mowing people's lawns. I'm not going to let you use that money to go buy Nintendo and buy video games and sit around all day.
Interesting.
We're going to buy stocks. And this is before E-Trade and everything else. And so that's really where, you know, my mind went. And as a teen, I started buying stocks.
Do you remember your first stock?
Yeah, it was Wendy's. Yeah.
Wendy's.
Okay. Wendy's. Right. I bought Wendy's and I bought... the group at the time that owned Madison Square Garden. So yeah, I was just, you know, there were a couple of different, I bought a mutual fund. I think it was a Janus mutual fund. And I bought Wendy's because, you know, that was probably the most popular fast food restaurant.
Right, you were a teenager. Makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, we ate Wendy's before going to play hockey all the time. So that was my foray into finance.
Wow. Okay, very cool. So let's talk a little bit about that. So how did your career unfold? Because you have had a pretty interesting career.
Yeah. So my dad got me interested in buying stocks. I didn't like it at first. Then as I was looking up my fantasy football scores in school, I would open the newspaper up and look at my stocks and go, oh, wow, I just made money. I was up 5/8 or, you know, 1.25. And I started going, wow, I'm making money without having to flip burgers at Wendy's by just owning the Wendy's stock. So that was a real eye-opening moment for me. So I knew I would enjoy this. But I didn't know other people needed help managing their money. I think, you know, oftentimes, whatever our parents teach us, we think everybody's parents are teaching us or teaching their kids. And so there's certain things that I never learned that other kids' parents were teaching them. But this was one where I picked it up that a lot of other people weren't. And I didn't realize that until I actually started my career in television, because I love sports and really enjoyed watching sports more than, I wasn't very skilled at playing them, but I was good at watching them. So I grew up in Pittsburgh. So, you know, it's a big sports town. And that I decided this is going to be my career path because this is something I really love. But once I got into that career path, I started recognizing, oh, man, a lot of people are not really investing their money. They're not really thinking about their future. They're basically just living for today. And so I said,
you mean the TV industry people were not like forward thinking?
TV industry people. Yeah, TV industry people, you know, friends of mine that were about the same age, you know, I knew that we were making about the same amount of money, but they had more disposable income than I did. And so I started asking them, how much money are you putting in your 401k? And they were like, nothing. I said, do you have an IRA or a Roth IRA? And they were like, no. They're like, I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. Why would I think about making any kind of investments that could be taking away some of the enjoyment that I'm having today? And so I understood their mindset. And then I started asking a lot of other people similar questions. And I just started realizing there's a lot of people out there that have no idea about, you know, things that they can do to give themselves a good life today and in the future.
It is kind of remarkable. You know, if you're not plugged into it, you really may not have any idea that this stuff ever exists. So it's kind of a whole world. Like I remember there was a story about, they were like friends of Warren Buffett. And so they had been investing in Berkshire Hathaway stock. They're basically like, Warren, just do this. But they were like professors or something. They were like not making a ton of money. And like when they died, they had like over $100 million.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it is kind of crazy. And you talk to people and they get all, let me just, how do you feel about compound interest? You get excited about that?
Oh, look, compound interest. Compound interest is, you know, an amazing phenomenon.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't.
Well, I mean, all right. So for those that don't know what compound interest is, what's the skinny on it?
Yeah, basically your efforts just keep compounding. So it's not like you go 1 + 1 = 2, and then you're going to go 2 to 3, 3 to 4. Here you're going to go 1 to 2, 2 to 4, 4 to 8, 8 to 16. So you just really start to, you know, basically what they say, have a hockey stick moment where things just start to take off on you. And so it's just basically a compounding of it. And you can come, the compound interest, not just in finance, but in your own life. I mean, everything you're doing hopefully is compounding to bear even more fruit.
Well, like for, you know, younger professionals listening to this podcast, I guess this podcast is great for two reasons. Number one, we're learning a little bit about the career of a financial advisor. And number two, we're learning about like pretty essential like tools, compound interest, IRAs, 401ks, and so on and so forth. So let me ask you this from your perspective, like if this seems like a career that somebody might want to go into, like who would be like, what kind of like personality types, you know, what kind of, I don't know, talents or whatever would you think would be suitable for this career, and who probably should maybe not go into this career at all?
Well, I mean, the easiest one, if you don't want to go into this career, it'd be somebody that just does not like dealing with people. Right now, I'm not sure what career you go into. You know, my veterinarian, he says, you know, people think all I have to do is deal with cats and dogs, but they don't just bring themselves into the office themselves. I still got to deal with people. So, I mean, having to deal with people is something that most professions you have to do. But and certainly in this one, you have to be really good with people. I think people that are organized, they like having systems, those people really excel in this. You don't have to be an extrovert. I'll say, you know, I definitely enjoy being out there and talking to a lot of people, but I've seen very, very successful advisors who are much more introverted, but they're able to channel their people skills when they need to inside of their relationships. And so introverts and extroverts can both do well. I think if somebody is a really disciplined, organized person, has a level head, that's a really important thing. I mean, right now in bullish markets, things kind of feel good, but you know, at some point the cycle will change. We'll have some really bad markets, and you've got to deal with people who are going to be a little bit more stressed out about, you know, their future financial situations. And you got to be able to still talk to them in a very calm way, a measured way. And so having a level head is important there too.
A level head. Yeah. I would think a mercurial personality wouldn't do so well in this, like somebody quick to anger.
Stay with Rockstar.
Yeah, rock stars need not apply. But like, yeah, somebody quick to anger, maybe somebody that's like, you know, panics or very fear oriented or finds themselves to be very fearful. Like, I mean, you know, because I think a lot of the confidence from financial planners, and correct me if I'm wrong, comes from the history of the market itself. Like, even if you look at the chart over the past like 100 some years and you see the dips for the depression in 2008, it still goes up and to the right. So,
right.
Yeah. So, all right, that's very good advice. Now, what about, I think your profession, this seems to me to be a great profession in the AI age because it's so human to human. And if anything, these tools are only going to help you gain more insights into what you do. Am I wrong on that, or is that how you see it?
Oh, no, I think you're 100% right. I mean, I use the tools myself, AI tools, to if I need a quick little skinny on something. And I think they're really powerful in helping people, I think, in terms of trying to get their minds framed right. But they still need a human being to like talk them through some of these things, because a lot of times, you know, when I go to the doctor, I don't pretend to be a doctor. But if I'm starting to feel certain ways before I go in, I might research some things. What questions should I ask the doctor? And that way, when I go in, I go, well, I'm feeling this and this and this, and I've already checked over these other couple of things. And so that really, I think, helps my experience then with the doctor. But I'm still wanting that human being to say, you're okay, Mike. You don't have to amputate your leg. You're not going to die. Right. And so I think it's the same thing here in this case.
The other thing that comes to mind in terms of AI in your industry is that, and this is another thing that we should probably point out, is that a lot of times, I don't know what the cutoffs are, but certain financial advisors, you know, they work with people that have $1 million in savings and up, or maybe $100,000 in savings up. And, you know, there's some people that specialize in $25 million and up, or and even beyond. So, but I'm thinking about for like a lot of people that might not have, there may be the opportunity to exist for like at that very smaller end of the market, people to get access to some wisdom and advice that they might not otherwise be able to get access to. Do you agree with that or not really?
Well, I mean, it all comes down to business model, right? It all, at the end of the day, somebody is asking you, hey, understand my situation and then give me the best advice based on that. And so it still takes time to understand somebody's situation. So there's only so many families one person could really serve. Technology right. definitely helps you in terms of expanding the number of families because it can do certain things for you that speed up the time. But it's still like a one-on-one conversation is still a one-on-one conversation. And if somebody's pouring their heart out about their divorce or the loss of their spouse or something, the loss of their job, that stuff takes time. And you can't rush that. You have to let that play out. And so that's the real trouble. If you want to say what's the trouble in the industry, it's that it tends to serve wealthier people simply because it's really hard to serve a lot of people with that really detailed level of care.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, this is all really good insight. Now, there, I guess before we go, you have had to have some level of certification. Do you have to do ongoing training? How does that all work?
Yeah, you have to get certifications. So depending on whether you want to, you know, buy and sell stocks for commissions or you want to do advisory business, there's different government certifications that you have to have in order to be a financial professional. And then continuing education is a common thing in all of these professional fields. And so we have plenty of continuing education. Getting your certified financial planner designation, that's another whole level of certification. And then you got to do continuing ed for that as well. But all that's good. I mean, you know, the industry, the world's changing so fast that you want to be on top of all these things. You want to make sure that you're not missing something. I mean, right now, one of the big things is all the scams around elderly people, people scamming elderly people out of money because it's just so much easier with all of today's technology. And so, you know, understanding some of these things so that you can better protect your clients, totally important for us to know. And so continuing ed sometimes gets a bad rap as if it's like just something you have to do, but it's amazing how many things are happening now that it's really good to be on the pulse of them.
Gotcha. And how do people get started in this profession? Is this the kind of thing you should get an internship in, or like, how would you advise like your kid if they wanted to get involved in this profession?
Yeah, I would say an internship's good. Talk to as many people as possible. My sister lives up in Boston. She was in financial marketing. She had a friend whose dad was at Fidelity. And so I was able to go over and talk to him. And as an executive, he had a bunch of other relationships in all different parts of Fidelity. And so I was able to go talk to people within the investment management if I wanted to go become an analyst or an advisor and all that kind of stuff. And so it was a great tool for me to, he was a great resource for helping me figure out like what kind of day-to-day do I want? Because I love looking at stocks. I love breaking down the numbers, but did I want that 8 hours a day every day? And I was like, no, I don't think I want to be like dialed into spreadsheets all the time. And so that's kind of why I went the financial advisor route. But I think the more conversations you have, the more you can start seeing what people's day-to-days look like. So shadowing advisors is a great thing. Having internships, that's a great thing. Get yourself as much exposure as possible so you can make a decision that best suits you. But once you get in the profession, you can do whatever you want. I mean, we had some people that just do planning work. They don't really want to necessarily go out and attract new clients. So they want to do planning work or operation. So there's a whole lot of different avenues to go even within this space.
Yeah, I mean, it is a business, right? So you do, there is client acquisition, there is getting the word out about you guys, there is the stock, there are the people that have to analyze the stocks and maybe pick what direction. And then there's the more client facing people. So I, you know, you did say something that like, I do need to ask this follow-up question is some of these trading jobs have way different paces. Like let's take the extreme example of somebody who might be on the floor at the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, you know, the guys yeah. trading and having heart yeah. attacks and getting stepped over. And then like, would you say that this pace is like not, it seems like to be like more of a leisurely kind of like type of, I don't want to call it that maybe, but it's not, doesn't yeah. have the same level of like heartbreaking intensity that some of these other ones might.
Oh yeah. I mean like the investment banking, I mean, all those articles you read in the Wall Street Journal, Bloomberg about investment bankers at the big Wall Street firms and, you know, the dues they have to pay early on as a junior banker and they're working 18 hour days and they're sleeping at the office and they're working Saturdays and Sundays and they're having burnout, extreme burnout and depression and all these other things. Yeah, this is a different type of pace. I mean, if you're getting started in this business, you really got to grind it the first few years for sure to try to, you know, build up your business. But so I don't want to say that it's a leisurely type thing,
right?
But not necessarily the same as some of these other programs where to be an analyst, you're going to be you know, 80, 90 hours a week, just logging away, and it's really going to affect your health. I think there's a great way that you can create great balance within this field. I mean, I've got four kids now, and they're all small. They're under 6 years old. So, I mean, my life is a lot different today than it was when I first got in this business 12 years ago. And fortunately, I can navigate it by saying, okay, I got these certain commitments for the family, and then I can also get all my commitments for work done. And sometimes they're just done in different parts of the day.
So, all right, this brings us to our question that we'd like to ask, which is, on a scale of 1 to 10, how likely are you on any given night to be able to have a family dinner?
Oh, 9.9.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, let's take the family involvement a step further. Scale of 1 to 10, how able are you to be able to coach like a soccer team or a little league team?
Yeah, I mean, my kids aren't there yet to be on those teams, but I should be able to do all of that stuff for sure. Okay. So I mean, it would be almost a 10.
Gotcha. All right. So even right now, if like you were one of those kind of like strange people that coach other kids' children, then you could do that. Okay. All right. So, and then let's see, I'm assuming that this is the other question. I don't like to talk dollars and cents, but like if you go to Disney World with a family of four for a week, do you have to stay in the budget hotel, the moderate hotel, or the nice hotel comfortably and, you know, without stressing, or can you not go to Disney World?
Oh, no, you definitely go to Disney World. I would say in terms of your hotel accommodations, it really depends on, you know, where you are in your career. If you're just getting started as an advisor, I would probably recommend staying in the budget hotel because, you know, you never know when the market takes a dip. It adjusts out what your income looks like. So I would advise on the budget hotel. But as you build, if you're a grinder and you keep going at it and you're persistent about growing your business and your career, you can eventually work your way into very nice accommodations.
All right. You're staying at the Grand Floridian. All right. That, you know what? That was such a great answer for a financial advisor. People are mostly like, I don't know, the medium one. All right. Well, Mike, thank you so much. I really do appreciate your time today. This is fantastic.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Larry. I think what you're doing is a great service for all the people out there who are trying to figure out what they want to do for their lives. And if any of those people say, hey, I'm thinking about becoming a financial advisor, reach out to me. I'd be happy to have a conversation with you.
Awesome. We'll put Mike's LinkedIn profile in the notes. And if you enjoyed this podcast today, please like it or share it. And if you can, be grateful for something.
Thanks for listening. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Dream Job Cafe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen. And don't forget to check out wayspark.co, where we help people navigate careers in a crazy world.